All right, yeah. Another episode of Whiskey Throttle Radio. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'm Kurt Lucas, your host. We got a great episode for you today. We have Jake Runkles, privateer out of Maryland, on to talk all about his 2018 outdoor season and, you know, just some other stuff that's going on in his life. We'll also have Billy Scharf on to talk about MXON at Red Bud. This past weekend, USA struggled a little bit, so we kind of break that down. We were both there. You know, for those of you who weren't there, we saw some things that we might want to point out to why we struggled so much. But, yeah, so it's a great episode. Again, thank you for listening. As always, huge shout-out to Blood Lubricants for supporting the show. They also support, you know, top privateers like Tyler Bowers and Henry Miller. And, you know, they make high-quality racing lubricants, and they want to help you out a little bit, too. So make sure you use promo code WHISKEY for 25% off at bloodlubricants.com. That's B-L-U-D, lubricants.com. Again, promo code WHISKEY for 25% off. Also want to give a huge shout-out to Risk Racing for supporting the show. Risk Racing is a motocross company dedicated to designing innovative products. They're passionate about the sport and want to interact with others that have that same passion. Researched, designed, and tested by professionals, their products provide users with functional, innovative solutions. They're engineered for reliability and performance in demanding environments and used by the best teams in the world. That's www.riskracing.com. So check them out. As always, find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Check out our Patreon account. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and yeah, enjoy. Before we get into our interview with privateer Jake Runkles, we're going to talk a lot about the Motocross of Nations at Red Bud this past weekend with my main man, Billy Scharf. What's up, dude?
What's going on?
Nothing much, man. Just, you know, drinking an ice cold beer, about to talk to you about dirt bikes. I can't complain.
Hey, that sounds like a hell of a night to me, man. I'm excited to talk. It seems like it's been forever. Even though we saw each other at the race, I feel like been too long.
Yeah, but you were hanging out with Monster Girls, bro. Like, I you know, like, how was I supposed to hang out with you? I felt like I saw you for 2 minutes. Your wife doesn't listen to this, by the way, right? I didn't just get you in trouble.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We'll find out, I guess. There's one way to find out.
Well, hey, man, I will let you know this. I had a long drive home Sunday afternoon. And it was a really long one because I was pretty bummed out about you know, USA getting sixth place.
Yeah, it certainly you know, we traveled. We had a 3-hour layover in Detroit, and I still, you know, I was telling most of the people I was with that it'd probably take me a week to get over it. It's definitely you know, as awesome as the event was, it certainly left a bad taste in my mouth seeing that we didn't fare so well on home soil. But I'm with you. It's been frustrating.
Yeah, it was rough, man. So I was supposed to be at work at 8 a.m. Monday morning. I didn't end up getting there till 1. I had to sleep in my truck with my dog at the rest area in Ohio because I was falling asleep. Or in West Virginia, sorry. But, hey, you know, so I was like, fuck, you know, I'm doing all this shit, driving 20 hours to be at a race for, you know, 30. And so Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I was like pissed off, and I'm starting to feel a little bit better about it because I'm, like, trying to remember how much fun I actually had.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, looking back at pictures and just realizing, you know, what an opportunity it was to be there, you know, and it was once in a lifetime for sure. And, you know, but I'm starting to kind of weather the storm as well. It hasn't been easy to deal with it.
Yeah, and you had you have some sweet VIP thing you did too. So, you know, you even had the hookup and all that.
Yeah, definitely. I take a minute to give Brian Koster a shout out. He invited me up. Dunlop and Tucker Aki treated him, and he let me tag along. It was certainly a VIP experience. Got to hang out at the Rider Down dinner. Got at the table with Kevin Windham. I mean, you name it, they were there. So it was definitely a once in a lifetime experience for sure. And the amount of people there and the atmosphere, it was awesome. Like we talked about, obviously the Americans let us down, which is an understatement, but it was still a weekend I'll certainly never forget.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Before we get into the results, so let's talk about the track a little bit. I'm not going to lie, when I was walking up, I got there Saturday morning about 8 a.m., me and my dad, whenever the first practice were starting on Saturday, me and my dad walking up to the gate, and we're slipping and sliding in the mud, and I'm just thinking, God damn it, I just drove all this way, and it's going to be a mud fest. We're not even going to hit any of the jumps. Like, it's going to suck. It's going to be last year times two. And then the track was actually pretty good for how bad the pits were.
Yeah, I agree. I thought the same thing. I was a little bummed out. We get there, and it was pouring rain when we arrived. It had been pretty rainy Friday night, and then getting to the track Saturday, it was forecasted rain all day, and the track looked so good. You kind of couldn't really tell how much sand the FIM brought in, and I noticed a lot of the changes that they made, which we can kind of get into later. But yeah, I mean, I think bringing in the sand helped weather the water, but it definitely made for I thought the racing turned out to be good. The track was better than I thought, but it was definitely an interesting dynamic. And with Plessinger being a mud rider, as good as he looked in practice, I was like, man, this is his weekend. And then it just went downhill from there.
It looked more like Southwick than it did Red Butter, I thought.
And now here in the, I got to be honest, during the event, I didn't really realize how much sand, I'm with you, it did. And I'd been to Red Bud before, but with the rain, I figured it was just the rain, and that's why it looked so different. And then hearing the riders and then seeing some footage of how much sand they actually brought in and what the riders said, it wasn't anywhere near. Even Ferrandis, who's a GP guy in Roxen, those guys said the track wasn't anything like it. Yeah. You don't want to start off with that by making excuses for the Americans, but it certainly wasn't your traditional Red Bud combination of the track prep and then the rain, obviously. It was weird. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to put a little disclaimer out there. Everything we're going to talk about in this conversation, no excuses. Like, we got our ass kicked. I'm not making any excuses. I'm just going to state reasons why we didn't win. They're not excuses, but it's going to just be reasons why I think we didn't win. So, I mean, I'm sure you feel the same. You're not going to make excuses for us.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know. You couldn't have said it any better. I mean, no excuses. I think there's some valid reasons. I think maybe they bridged the gap a little bit on our home track advantage, but I don't think the home track advantage played any of it. Whatever the track conditions were, for whatever reason, everybody raced the same track, and we weren't even in the ballpark. I mean, it was that bad.
I almost think like I don't know, dude. Like, if you and me, we race off road, we're nowhere near the level of even getting close to practicing with these guys. But I almost feel like for the American guys, that it was kind of a shock because they have the mindset going in. They know what Red Bud is. They know how to ride Red Bud. And they get there, and it's nothing like how Red Bud usually is. And I feel like that kind of shocked them and kind of, just changed their whole mindset going in.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if they're, underestimated the world. I think they thought they had an advantage. They thought it'd probably be easier. Then you throw the mud. Then you throw how different the track was. I mean, even to the angles of the corners, they said the FIM changed the corner angle. You saw that big off camber where normally, our series, it kind of goes back up around the trees there. So it was really a totally different track, and I'm with you. I think it shocked them. And then not only did the track difference, but then the how fast those guys were going and the level of intensity. I mean, those guys raced the weekend before. You can use the travel excuses, which we've used that as an excuse going overseas. But, man, those guys were ready. They were fired up, wearing their hearts on their sleeve. And, I mean, from the first practice, you look at Palin, you look at Koldenhoff. I mean, those guys just came to race, and it's really amazing how they step up. And the Koldenhoff had podiumed two nationals, two GPs, two moto podiums.
Yeah.
Palin, I think, maybe a few, and they both just rode out of their minds. So I'm with you. I think it was a combination of a lot of things, and then the mentality, the pressure. I think it certainly got to our guys.
I say this because if you look, okay, like obviously our guys really didn't do that great, but I mean Frandis had a 7-8 score. Wow, that's good. He's on 250, but then you look at Hunter Lawrence and Jorge Prado, and they're, you know, second, third, and fourth. And then Roczen didn't have a good weekend either, who races the Nationals. So that's why I kind of think that, but
I'm with you. I think you're on to something because, you know, and Roczen struggled in our mud races. If you go back, he didn't light the world on fire in the few mud races we had at our Nationals. Oh, yeah. And I was really shocked at Roczen fading back to, what was that, ninth in that final race. I mean, really, really shocked at that. Frandis was our top AMA guy, and Frandis was struggling. I don't know if you got a chance to watch him. I mean, he was giving it everything he had and was struggling for those positions that he had. So certainly something to it. I mean, I don't know if you listened to the way Sipes talked about the way the corner shaped up and the way the Euros were riding, and no excuses, but it was an eye opener. I mean, Jorge Prado opened my eyes. How effortless he rides the bike. I mean, he led almost 20 minutes of that first race on a 250F. I think he was one of my bigger surprises, maybe other than Koldenhoff. So, there's a lot to talk about. I'm going to start with this. The best explanation I heard was Jeff Stanton. And I think, you get down to X's and O's. I think with the way that track shaped up, the way they laid it out, and then you throw in the mud, it was really one line. The only guys that came through traffic were Herlings and Caroli. And I just think the start, Stanton said 85% of it, and we did not get anywhere. Plessinger was sort of up there in the first one before he crashed. He was like seventh or eighth, but that was the best start we had, and it was just downhill from there, and it was brutally hard to watch. I was watching in the area. I was hanging out with Dungy. And it was actually really cool to see how into it Dungy was, because he was like visibly distraught.
Sweet brag, by the way.
It was crazy to see him. He was visibly upset. Like, he was having a hard time watching how long did it take Tomac to get around Tommy Searle? Tommy Searle, I don't think, is top five in 3 years.
He only got around Searle because Searle broke down.
Yeah, it was so hard to watch. I mean, it was excruciating.
Yeah, it's funny you say that Dungy was just looking on like, what the hell is going on? Like, it was weird, but like you said, I'm not giving you credit. Like Stanton said, the start, like, okay, Jorge Prado's a fucking badass. He won the GP, or MX2 class in the GP, but like, he's not better than Herlings and Caroli and all those guys, but he led half the first moto just because he got the start and it was hard to pass, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, Herlings went down pretty early in that race. I don't know if you saw it. And then,
well, that was Saturday. Saturday he went down.
No, he went down in the beginning of that first one, just a little tip over, and got back up in about sixth or – yeah, he got back up in about sixth or seventh.
I didn't see that.
And then he got into third – he got into third really quickly and then kind of settled in. But, you know, you say settled in for Herlings. I mean, I think he knew he was going to drop the hammer probably about that 20-minute mark when he saw it was Palin and Prado. I don't think he was in any hurry. He knew he had them covered. But, man, you know, Prado was riding easier and more effortless than any of them. And he's on 250, and he just looks so smooth. And then you watch Frandis and Plessinger on bikes that we know have power, and they just look terrible. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. So Sipes had some good points just about how we were slamming into those corners, and you couldn't slam those corners because they were, and Prado was just setting up sooner, kind of smooth through the corner, and just, I mean, looked like he was using half the energy. But yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it took Herlings a long time to get around him.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, let's move on to the results for, what's it, the fifth year in a row France takes it home. One of the biggest storylines coming into this race was the whole Marvin Musquin situation. Fevre got hurt, so then I have Tixier, who's been hurt so much the past couple of years and hasn't really done anything. You know, it was a privateer effort coming into this. No one kind of thought they were going to win, and look what happened. They won, you know?
Yeah, it all starts with Palin, man. That guy, they say he gets so fired up for
Palin.
Palin, sorry.
Oh, there's a U in there.
But, you know, the guy rode unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was in the front. From the first practice, I mean, he was the first guy out jumping the Rocco's leap, which was very hard to do with the way they laid the track out. The guy just rises to the occasion, and man, it started with him. Ferrandis did just enough, and then Tixier, bike blew up in that first one. Had to throw in a good motos coming down to the wire, and he delivered. They're just solid, man. Those guys, that event means a lot to them. You can tell. The one thing I learned is those guys, they want to win when they get there. They're giving it everything they got, and I just don't think the Americans have that sense of pride, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like what fueled them was the whole, like, oh, they fucked up. They didn't get Marvin on the team. They're not going to win. What the fuck are they doing? Like, and they're like, listen, like, I mean, like, look at last year. They got some enduro guy to ride the MX2 class, and they still kicked ass, you know, so. But, you know, and they didn't even have the best day. I mean, Paulin, 2-3, awesome. Insane. But Ferrandis went 7-8. Like, that's okay. And then Tixier, his 15th counted. So, I mean, not the best day. Like, I feel like normally, I don't know. I didn't look at any of the past destination results. But I feel like a 35 doesn't get you a win.
Right. No, yeah. You know, his bike broke in that one. And, you know, hats off to him. Paulin absolutely delivered. I mean, the guy, I have to check the GP scores. He hasn't really been near the front that often, maybe a moto here or there, but I can't think of him not being at the front. He got starts and he delivered, and that, it set the tone. They say he's a huge leader for that team, and they take it to a whole new level from a team atmosphere. You watch those guys ride and practice together, just the way that they're into it. And, you know, I give them props, man. It's 5 years in a row is awesome.
We're like the next USA. What do we win, 11 in a row? Something like that?
So. I can't even think about it. It's been so long since we've won, I sort of forgot about that.
Yeah, but hey, dude, so kind of third moto, before the third moto, I was like, all right, if we can just go 1-2, Barsha and Tomac, maybe we still have a chance. But, you know, after the starts, I was like, all right, it's not happening. So then I was rooting for Italy, because after watching Caroli, Gap, Roxon, and everyone else on Saturday, I was like, I'm the biggest Caroli fan now. He's just so smooth, and he's old, and his chick's hot. Like, he's a fucking badass. So I was really wanting Italy to win, and they came close.
Yeah, I'm with you. Saturday, I've never seen anybody ride so effortlessly on such a rough track, muddy-wise, and just walk away that like that. It was unbelievable. You know, you think about Roxon's normally the one that makes it look easy here. Well, Caroli made Roxon look like he was had horrible form. It was really awesome. And then, the way he came from the back, he almost caught Tomac in that first race after being down the first turn.
Yeah.
And then you look at the scores, we're all adding it up. And Italy was in the driver's seat. And then Lapino hole shots that last race. I mean, where's Lapino come from? And he's running up front. And it's like, man, Italy's going to win this thing. And then fortunately, you know, it came down to the end and it was pretty intense, but I was sort of rooting for Italy. I was really rooting for Gibbs down the first turn of that last one, but man, I'm with you. It was cool to see it all come down like that, even though the Americans didn't even have a shot.
Yeah, exactly. And like, if Caroli just didn't go down in that first moto, I think they would have had it. By the way, Lupino, 13th place this year in the MXGP series. And
unbelievable, man. And
it's crazy. Crazy.
And he led a lot. I mean, Coldenhoff got him, but he was up in second for a long time. And it just shows you how important those starts are. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the American Nationals, the Red Bud, Tomac probably beats him by a minute. And Tomac and Barsha are back in. I mean, they're in the back of the pack. I almost had to just walk away. It was really hard to watch that last one. And then I kind of regrouped and just wanted to watch Coldenhoff and see if Herlings was going to catch him. I was actually shocked that he didn't really try to drop the hammer and catch him, but Coldenhoff was on rails.
So you think we'll take that into a segue to talk about the Dutch who got third, but so you think Herlings just kind of chilled out and was like, all right, we're getting third, whatever. Like, I'm not going to try to win. Cause I think Herlings is a cocky little shit. And I think that he would try to win. And I think Coldenhoff was just damn good that day.
Coldenhoff was his day, buddy. I mean, the guy wasn't even dirty. I mean, you could have put a 4 on his bike and it could have been Herlings. I mean, he was that good. I think he tried. I think Herling's tried. I think the way that track shaped up, it was really hard to make up, you know, that kind of time by the time he got into second place. I think he dropped the hammer maybe for a few there and realized that it was going to be, and he, I think he sort of mailed it in because Koldenhoff was jumping the leap every lap with ease. Yeah. And that was worth two, three seconds. He was the only one consistently. Tomac was consistently jumping it. Tomac was doing it consistently in the third race, but he's back in 13th place. So.
Yeah, exactly. What's the matter then? So, yeah, the Netherlands, here are their five scores. 1-1-1, 2-36 with Calvin Vlaanderen, their MX2 guy. Rock to the eye in that first moto. And, like, I think – so they lost by – let me see. So, 6 points. So, they needed a – all they needed was, like, a 30 in that last moto, and they would have won. Like, you patched that motherfucker's eye up and sent it back out there.
Yeah, I thought that too. But, you know, it was disappointing. I didn't know it was his eye until I actually didn't see him on the track there in that second one because mm-hmm. I was looking for him because I knew that was going to be the case, and then I didn't see him on the track, and then somebody I was with said he was injured. But, man, you talk about domination. To still get on the podium with a guy that didn't even finish the two motos in the MX2 class, and he was the second fastest qualifier, you know, on that bike in practice. So he obviously had the speed to, I mean, shoot, if he'd have just taken a 15th, they easily win it. So it's disappointing for those 30, guys because they were certainly the best.
He could have got 30th, team. Billy. He could have got 30th and they would have won.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. Herlings and Colt. The only one I think that had anything for those guys was Caroli. And he was just, you know, you saw it on the qualifier Saturday, but mm-hmm. Sunday he just didn't have any luck.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say the one thing that stands out to me, and this is obviously I ride KTMs, but those 19 KTMs are going to be flying off shelves. Those bikes look head and shoulders better than the rest of them. Yeah. Between Prado, Caroli, Koldenhoff, and Herlings, they literally looked like they were on different mo- – like it looked like they had an advantage the way those bikes were working on that track.
It looked a lot better than Cowie when they had DeSalle, Searle, and Tomac all blow up.
Not a good day for the green, for Team Green.
No. But hey,
and just visibly watching Tomac ride, it looked he was fighting that bike. Why they went and rode the 19, I don't know. But it was like a light switch went off for Tomac at the end of the first one. If you look at his lap time at the end of the first race, and then how fast he was going in the third one, but it just too little, too late. And it's hard for me to talk about.
So you know the whole deal with the Dutch's MX2 guy though. He's actually South African. Calvin Vlaanderen.
I did, yeah. He's got dual citizenship. That's why I thought they were a huge threat because that guy's won some MX2 motos. Yeah. That's interesting.
Do you think that the South Africans did a little voodoo and poked his eye out, a little voodoo doll, just for like not riding for them? Well, I heard South Africa.
Well, the fact that they
didn't want him, but
still. The fact that Puerto Rico beat South Africa in the B main, I wouldn't put it past them.
Yeah, man, that was cool too, Puerto Rico. But we'll get into that. Like you said, Australia. I mean, obviously Hunter Lawrence. Like I don't want to say carries that team because Evans had a 10th and Kurt Gibbs was hauling too. But man, Hunter Lawrence is fucking good. He's good.
Yeah, it's the second time I watched him ride, and the GP, I was blown away at him on that turd Suzuki. I don't know why he struggled so bad in the GP. They were saying his bike wasn't very good over there. And then he got on the Geico Honda when they let it, they released him early, and he came over here. The dude is bad to the bone. Unbelievable ride. The way that second moto when he ran, and Watson was riding great. That three-way battle there in that second race for second between the three MX2 guys. But Hunter Lawrence just dropped the hammer with about 5 minutes to go. And the dude, I have no idea. He made that 250F look like it was the fastest bike on the track. Awesome to watch him ride.
If I'm Geico, I'm so stoked, and I'm so looking forward to next year. They got to be so pumped.
That guy's going to win, and he's going to win right away, even in Supercross.
Okay, that I don't know about that. You never seen him on Supercross track before?
Australians get Supercross at a pretty early age.
That's
There's
true.
Some,
that, you're right.
Stamp it. That kid wins immediately.
All right. We'll see. We'll see, Billy. You've been known to be wrong on this podcast, and I've always been right. So. hey, fifth place, the UK or Britain or whatever the fuck you want to call it. Ben Watson, man. Where'd this kid come from? I know this year was the first time I really noticed him in the GPs, but he's pretty damn fast, too.
Yeah, you could just tell the way him and Searle were riding. I don't know what they're telling these FIM guys to get them fired up, but, man, these dudes were riding. Searle has basically been a has-been for the last couple of years, and he was – you could see in his intensity. And then that second moto, Watson ran down Prado, and if it wasn't for Lawrence running them both down, I mean, the dude was just – I mean, man, he was flying. I'm with you, man. The dude, they just stepped their game up, man.
It was – he was – man, I knew he'd been good, like, kind of year, all year, but he was really good. And then Anstey, man, everyone's been talking shit on Anstey. I guess, let me see, I have a stand right here. I guess he didn't have a very good year, 10th place in the GPs, but people forget he went 1-1 last year in Britain. He was pretty good. And then Searle was good, too. I mean, I don't even know if Searle was good, if Tomac was riding just that bad. I don't know, but Searle looked good, and they had our number all day.
What did Watson beat Prado in the second race? Do you have the stat?
I know
he was all over him. I know Lawrence.
No, Prado went 3-3 and Watson went 15-4. So he didn't get.
That's right. So. That's right. Yeah, I know Lawrence went around both of them like they were sitting still, but it was just an awesome race. And of course, Coldenhoff was long gone ahead of him. But the C3 MX2 guys. Battling for second overall in that moto was probably the best racing of the weekend.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, that brings us to sixth place, the United States of America. Do we want to talk about it, or is it one of those things where you're just like, it happened, you know, we're moving on?
Yeah, I mean, you can talk about it a little bit. I mean, you know, I had a good conversation with the guy. I mean, to see all three of them have terrible days. I mean, Plessinger's a mud rider. He dominated. I know the track wasn't anything like our Red Bud, but the dude dominates in the mud. Wasn't even like Aaron Plessinger was on the motorcycle. And then Tomac, other than the way he rode in the third race, it wasn't Eli Tomac. And then Barcia looked really good in his qualifier, and then just bad starts and nowhere near the front. So.
So,
I mean, he said a bike problem. Did you hear what happened to his bike in the last one? Because he was putting on a hell of a charge.
He got a flat.
Okay. So, yeah, I know he was riding. You know, he was flying, and then he just settled into, what, like 11th there?
13th.
Mailed it in. 13th, yeah, it was bad.
You know what the Plessinger ride reminded me of? You didn't see it so much at the end of the year, but you remember at the beginning of the year he'd go 1-1 at Glen Helen, and then the next weekend he'd go 7-11, and you're – kind of like, huh? Like, what's going on? Scratching your head. That's kind of what it reminded me of, you know? Like, he just didn't have it, you know? And it looked like he was trying his ass off. It looked like he was just out there cruising. He was riding hard, and it wasn't working for him.
That's what was so frustrating, is it looked like the intensity was there, and he was going backwards. I mean, if you look at it, and no knock on these guys. I mean, I've ridden with Lorenzo Licurcio, and I've ridden, you know, obviously we've seen with Pascal Rauschenaker, the off-road guy. They were ahead of him. I believe they might have even beat him in that last race. I mean, those guys in a national, I mean, Plessinger, his lap times in the AMA series were competitive to Tomac at a lot of the rounds. Domination. And the dude's back there battling with a full-time off-roader who's never raced in a national.
They both beat
him. And it was like, what is going on? And I think the mental side got to him, because there's no way you can't. It just had to be mental, man. That dude, man, it's just seeing the fact that neither of the three have done a social media post, or I think Plessinger finally did, but they did that little Racer X show. But you can just tell those guys that I think the pressure got to them.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting at the press conference at Monster Cup this weekend, because Tomac and Barcia are both racing that. They're obviously gonna ask him about donations, you know. So maybe we'll see it there. Who knows? I mean, they got to be pissed. I mean, they have to be just as bummed out. I mean, they're way more bummed out. What am I talking about? They're way more bummed out than we are. Like, you think you and me are bummed, bro? Tomac and Barcia and Plessinger have to be gutted. Gutted.
Yeah, and you think about it from the perspective, you know, we're going overseas next year. Tomac's proven he doesn't want to go overseas. Barcia may not get another shot, you know, and Plessinger may not get another shot. He's riding the big bike. So, you know, they might have this, you know, you think about, you know, when you do anything competitive, something, you know, you have just at our level, it stings for a long time. And I don't know if they'll ever get over this, you know. And then my fear is somebody like Plessinger mentally going into the 450s, he was so on such a high dominating, but this could knock him down a few notches. And we know how mental this sport can be, man. But that was just a full-blown ass-whooping. One they might never live. You know, when you got McGrath, Villopoto, Carmichael, all the legends.
Everyone.
Right there in your camp. Everyone's there, and you got to face them. With, and it's not like we got second and it came down to the end.
I've been pumped at the podium, man.
We weren't even mathematically in contention going into the final race, even with a 1-2.
We sucked.
You got beat by a full-time off-roader from Austria who's never raced a pro national.
Who rides XC2, and GNC doesn't even win that.
Doesn't even win that.
He's outright
he XC1. Badass. You know, Ben Parsons told me how fast he was at Moto, and, dude, that guy should go Moto full-time because he is fast.
He can beat Plessinger, so, you know, sign him to Star Yamaha next year. All right, enough for USA before I cry. Seventh place Belgium, they're always good. Dude, DeSalle was fast, and Van Horbeek, they were both good. You know,
yeah.
I don't know, man, like, it was so weird that, because I'm like looking at scores, I'm like, oh yeah, that guy was ahead of our guys, that guy was ahead of our guys, that guy was ahead of our guys. Like, they just, and like, Tomac and Barcia, like, they were trying their asses off. And then you got, like, DeSalle and Horbeek were in front of them, you know? It's just like, what the fuck is going on? Did these guys just step up for this event? Or are they just that much better than us, you know? I think it's a bit of both, honestly.
I really think the pressure got to our guys because third moto. Okay, I don't know if you got a chance to watch it, but I saw it right where I was sitting. You know, Tomac, the whole qualifier didn't get around Searle. The whole first one planted behind Tommy Searle. And then the third moto, no pressure. We had no chance to win. It was just go out there. Tomac looked like Tomac. Of course, he got a horrible start. He went around Tommy Searle like he was sitting still in the third one and went right to the front, and then he crashed and had to do it all over again. And he's jumping the leap in traffic, and he's loose on the bike. And so I think it was mental because, yeah, maybe Tommy Searle, maybe DeSalle. DeSalle's a great rider, stepped up, but Tomac was not Eli Tomac. And it was that's just my opinion anyway.
Yeah. All right. Eighth was Spain. Obviously, Jorge Prado was on rails all weekend. There are Jose Buchon and Carlos Campano or Campano. I don't know how to say it. They weren't at that as great, but Prado carried that team, and he was a surprise. And isn't he coming over here pretty soon? Not next year, but the year after, maybe? Did I hear that before? Do you know? Your industry, bro. You probably know.
Well, that was the rumor, certainly. But I think now, I mean, if you're KTM and you look at this kid, I mean, they're probably going to throw an open checkbook at him to keep him there. I mean, I know his intentions are to come run Supercross. The kid's 17 years old. After watching him ride is sort of that Caroli look, like you kind of just watch him and it's like he's on a different track on a different bike. I mean, he just made it look easy. So I became a huge Jorge Prado fan after this weekend, and I be honest, I watched him ride at the GP last year and wasn't impressed. So that kid's a real deal. I hope he comes over.
Yeah, that'd be really cool. Estonia, 9th, 10th, Germany, Roxen. He looked good on Saturday. He couldn't beat Caroli, but he still looked better than everybody else. And then, you know, Sunday, I know he went down in his first moto, but he just never really looked that great. His starts weren't that great either. You know, I don't know what's going on. Freaking Max Nagel on the TM was hauling ass, though. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, Max Nagel was going for it on the TM for sure. Yeah, I'm with you on Roxen. The guy, he didn't do good in the mud all year. I don't know maybe if it's a strength issue or what have you, but it certainly didn't look like Ken Roxon and I'm used to seeing. Maybe it was the fact that his team was out of it. Maybe that first moto crash. I don't know, but man, he got outclassed for sure.
Yeah, it was weird to see. I was kind of really hoping he, you know, him and Herlings would duke it out and stuff. That was kind of my other glimmer of hope after USA started sucking. Canada 11th. Did you see, I think it was the last moto, Medaglia was running like 8th and Barcia could not catch him. Maybe it was the second moto. Barcia, before Medaglia's bike, his bike blew up too. Another Kawasaki, by the way. But Barcia could not catch Tyler Medaglia.
Yeah, it was weird. There was too much of that going on, guys, that, I mean, it almost, you know, I was just too frustrating to even watch, man. I mean, I could not figure out why Aaron Plessinger, because Plessinger was pretty good in the qualifier until he crashed. You know, he's up there beating those guys, and then Barcia, too. Barcia was right on Koldenov, almost past Koldenov. I think you would have got him with another lap to go. And then come Sunday, Koldenhoff's on the other side of the track after 10 minutes. It's going to take me a while to get over it.
Maybe we just need a good battle this weekend at Monster Cup, and I'll be over it.
Here's the thing, though. I'm at the point where I'm not even going to watch our Nationals the same.
Oh,
Jeffrey Herlings shows up. Jeffrey Herlings shows up last year and comes from last to first,
yeah,
annihilates
that
us.
Count. Tomac was trying to win a championship.
I don't know, dude. I'm still a little bitter. Sorry.
Tomac beat him at the GP the next weekend in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I know. I'm clinging to that. That's and the fact that he was only 0.4 seconds off his fastest lap.
Yeah, come on.
I'm blaming the start.
Tomac gets a whole shot. It's whole different ball game. Whole different ball game. You know.
I know, and that's what we wanted to see. It would have been so good. And yeah, we didn't even. I mean, it wasn't even like it was close. They weren't even after three laps. They weren't even on the same side of the track.
Yeah, it was.
And it's like, what are we? What are we doing? But the track was certainly one line. Seeing a guy like Lapino hole shot and stay up there for 15 minutes, like you said, the guy hadn't even top 10 to GP. It was, but hey, it is what it is. Starts were 85% of it. I'm sticking with Stanton.
Hey, on a happier note, 19th place, Team Puerto Rico. Was that cool as fuck or what when Sipes and Windham were out front in that B main?
Yeah, that was probably the highlight of the weekend. Probably the loudest the fans. The fans were so loud. It was just ridiculous how loud. I get goosebumps just thinking about it, man. I mean, just seeing them rally behind those guys, I'll certainly never forget it. And I got to hang with Kevin Windham Friday night and talk about it, and that was cool.
Yeah, that was super cool. Caveman K-Dub. Dude's hair is everywhere.
Yeah, he looks like Tom Hanks from Castaway.
He does. So, hey, I heard a story. You were hanging out at Monster Chicks on Friday night, or is it Saturday night?
I'm not. Where'd you hear that from?
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, Chelsea.
It was so funny, man. We were in the hotel in South Bend. We had a really good group, and, you know, Friday night we were getting ready to go, just kind of walk around, and right when I said, let's go, no joke, as I told Brian that I'd meet him outside, like, I turn and all the Monster girls that were scheduled for the weekend come walking into our hotel and come up to the bar, and it was pretty cool. And, you know, that was that. And it was, it started off the weekend right, and we had a hell of a time.
No Carrie Bowling, though.
I don't believe she was there. Unfortunately.
That's a bummer. Do you have any Lot B stories? Because I have a couple good ones.
Man, I didn't, you know, we were on such a set schedule with the Dunlop guys. You know, they had dinner planned every night. They were really trying to wine and dine their dealers. So we respected that. And they were so awesome to us, Dunlop, Tucker, Rocky. So, yeah, I didn't get a chance to make it back. I heard the pit bike race was insane. And our plan was to make it back. But, no, I didn't. I saw a couple videos. I'm kind of bummed I didn't get to see a bunch of my buddies I wanted to see. But it is what it is. How was it?
Lot B was insane. We walked there Saturday night. And there's people throwing fireworks at each other, people running on top of porta potties. Some kid found a volleyball and was calling it Wilson the whole night and just like decking people with it. It was pretty gnarly. I saw some videos from Friday night of people trying to get in there in their campers about flipping them over. But you mentioned the pit bike race, bro. That was insane. So, like, there's probably 6,000 to 7,000 people there, no joke. And it was right before they were going to get off. And then Travis and all those guys show up on a mule and, like, go into the middle of the track. And everyone storms the gates. There's 100 people on the track. And then they let the pit bike guys go to try to get everyone off the track. And they were hitting people. And it was gnarly. It was pretty fucking awesome, though.
Yeah, I heard it was one for the books, man. I'm bummed I missed that. But across the board, man, I think aside from, you know, our misery with the team doing – it was certainly one I'll never forget, man. I'm glad that we got to be a part of it and hang out. And I'd encourage anyone to go to a Donations. It's my second one. I'd encourage anyone to go to Redbud because it's just an awesome place.
How, before I let you go, what's your guess on how many people were there on Sunday?
I'd say 50,000, maybe 55.
Yeah, I say that too. It was fucking packed, though. It was way more than any national I've ever been to, that's for sure.
Yeah, there was really nowhere to go, and it almost got exhausting with trying to walk in the mud and manage all the people. And it was there was no break, there was no grass left. It was a workout just getting around.
No, it was hard to walk in that place, but man, in the mud. It was hard to walk.
Yeah, it really was. And the pits were just, I mean, it was just covered in mud. And, man, just seeing all the people troop, nobody was complaining. Such good vibes, good people. Dudes wearing Speedos. That was a little disturbing, but people dressed up, you know, the British the British Royal Army or Navy. Man, it was awesome. I wish I would have got some more videos, and it's been fun going through social media and going through it all, but it was fun. I wish we could do it all over again with a dry track, and I wish we could run it back.
Yeah, definitely. I almost got in a fight. I almost got my ass whooped. I shouldn't say fight, but, you know, we'll save that one for another day. Freaking some crazy drunk British guy, but he had, you know, like the chainsaw thing, the chainsaws they'd have.
Yeah,
he was doing that, but for like five laps, just holding her wide and like going up to people and stuff. So me and my dad were walking out, leaving, and he like puts it in my face. So I fucking shove his ass, and like he's so drunk, he falls flat in his face. And then next thing you know, it's a whole ordeal and all that, but it's all good.
Yeah, so you almost got your ass whooped by McGregor, like McGregor did?
Yeah, like McGregor did, for sure.
That was another buzz to the weekend, man. We stayed up all late. One of the Dunlop guys ran.
That was a highlight of mine. I don't like that little Irish fucker.
Yeah, I don't like him anymore either. I'm over that whole sport as a whole, but I wanted him to beat the Russian. And then I was like, you know what? The Americans are going to deliver. Didn't happen.
It wasn't good
but,
for
him. But, hey, man, it wasn't, but man, it's, you know, can't wait for the Monster Cup and get back to our normal. I was hoping Hurlings would stay in the States and embarrass us at the Monster Cup, but I guess he's already back testing in
he's back banging this chick
in Europe.
All right, my microphone died right there, but that was Billy Sharp just talking about his Nations, or of Nations, whatever it's called these days. So we thank him for coming on, and all right, yeah, commercial time. I want to talk to you guys about oil, and not just any oil. I'm talking about Blood Lubricants. Blood is a manufacturer of advanced technology synthetic lubricants for the racing industry. Jeff Green has been producing high quality synthetic lubricants since 1983 and is constantly pushing the bar for high quality oil. Blood sponsors top privateers like Henry Miller and Tyler Bowers and offers sponsorship programs from the amateur level all the way to the pros. Racing is in their blood. Whether you're ripping up the motocross track, hitting the hills on a side-by-side, or cruising back roads on your street bike, Blood Lubricants has you covered with their 100% synthetic oil, specifically engineered for high-performance machines, and their superior anti-wear technology that optimizes wet clutch performance and keeps your engine clean and reduces varnish. Make sure to check out their website, bloodlubricants.com, that's B-L-U-D, lubricants.com, or buyblood.com, B-U-Y-B-L-U-D.com. All products have a 100% guarantee, and be sure to use the promo code WHISKEY to receive the 25% off all products. Again, that's the promo code WHISKEY for 25% off all products. All right, back to the show. All right, on the line with me right now is privateer out of Maryland. We saw him ripping up the Lucas Oil Pro Nationals this year. It's Jake Runkles. What's up, man? How you doing?
Good. How are you? Glad to be on here.
Yeah, man, it's I love getting the privateers on here because it's you know, you get such a cool perspective. And then, you know, I heard your name a bunch because I don't know if you know or not, but you're Chris Kiefer's favorite rider.
I know, I got a lot of love from him this season, so that was really cool.
Did you ever find out why, like, why he's so intrigued with your last name? Have you ever talked to him?
Yeah, I talked to him a few times, and just something about Runkles. He just loves. I have a few people around here that feel the same way. I don't know. I guess just got a cool last name to some people.
Yeah, that's funny. But I figured there's a show. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's called Californication. It was on Showtime like 7 years ago. But
mm-hmm.
The side character or like supporting actor's name. His name was Runkles. Was his character's last name. So I thought maybe it had something to do with that. And that's actually what caught my attention. So that's pretty funny.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I didn't even realize that, but that's I'm gonna have to go back and watch that, I guess.
Yeah, man. Hey, you know, let's jump right in. Let's talk a little more about dirt bikes here. You had a pretty damn good outdoor season. You got some points, and you know, put together quite a few rides. Why don't you talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, this year was awesome. I qualified for all 9 that I tried for, which was really cool, and only had to go to the LCQ once, and ended up winning that. So I couldn't complain there. And then it was funny, actually, right before Unadilla, me and my dad were driving there, and I said to him, I'm like, man, I don't feel like I'm a pro just because I haven't got any points yet. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, something about that conversation, I guess, put a little fire under me, and went out there, qualified 14th, and then got that 17th in the second moto. So it was just a great season, and then to finally do that, get a few points, was icing on the cake for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned you're talking about how, you know, like, oh, I want to get some points, and that weekend it happens. I feel like that happens a lot, you know. Maybe it's just because then it's on your mind, and you just want to work towards that. But as you all know, Unadilla was pretty muddy. Do you consider yourself a mud rider, or just you just were good there?
Yeah, I mean, I usually don't, but I guess I kind of have to say I am, because that seems to be my best results. But there, it was kind of just you had to stay up. Mm-hmm. Whoever, I think only like 25 guys finished the second moto, so you had pretty good chances of, you know, scoring some points. But it was, I mean, we had so many lines that were off the track, you know.
Yeah.
Some of the hills we were going up, it was just we were in the grass.
Yeah.
And that's where the main line was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember there was one line, I think it was Ferranis was taken. It was inside one of, like, the, you know, the yellow markers, the big markers. And next thing you know, the next moto, I guess it was your guy's second moto. That was the main line, you know. So kind of, you know, anything goes that way.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, like, right before Sky Shot, we were following the fence all the way around. So we were probably like 10, 15 feet to the outside of the turn. I mean, it was crazy. And I mean, that was, you just had to take it, cause it wasn't, you know, all squirrely lines. It was nice and packed down.
Yeah, definitely. And, you mentioned, how, you know, like 25 guys finished that second moto. So you kind of just had to stay up. Is that like the mindset going in, or do you kind of have a different mindset for, you know, mudders, you know, compared to a normal race?
Yeah, like, definitely, you know, first of all, do you go for the start, do you not, mm-hmm. you know, especially if it's splashy, because you got to think about that. Hey, if I get blasted right away, oh my God, I was going to be messed up.
Yeah.
But, just kind of go for the start, and then, you know, find that flow that you can do for 30 minutes, because you don't want to go – you don't want to go too crazy to where you're falling all the time. And then, you know, you don't want to go too slow just because everybody's so fast. But yeah, then it comes to the point, hey, how's the bike? Stay off the clutch, you know, look for smoke. Because mm-hmm. Indiana, the final round, I mean, my bike smoked for 35 minutes.
Yeah, that was a gnarly one.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, I wanted to ask you what your favorite, you know, track is on the circuit, but, you know, coming from Maryland, I'd have to think it's definitely Buds Creek, right?
You would think, but I almost have to go to – I have a tie between either Unadilla and Millville.
Okay.
Those are – Unadilla's kind of underrated, I think, in my opinion. It's old school, but just – it's got a fun flow to it. And then – Millville, it's, I mean, everything looks different you know, in person than on TV, but that track just blew my mind when I saw it, and you know, I wrote it, and it was just awesome.
Yeah, the dirt looks really good in Millville. Not so much the sand part, but the other half of the track, it looks, you know, kind of tacky and soft and tacky at the same time. It's like that orange, you know, it's just really good dirt.
Yeah, yeah, and it seems like every year it's never the same. They always change something with that back rhythm section before the finish.
How,
so,
go ahead, sorry.
No, you're fine, I was done.
How steep is Mount Martin? Because like you said, on TV everything's different, you know, and it looks steep on TV, so I couldn't imagine that downhill with all the ruts. It's got to be insane at Millville.
Yeah, well, yeah, going down isn't too bad. It's a little intimidating when you're standing there and like when you first drop off, but you're kind of more scared going up for me because you're – I mean, you can barely walk up it.
Yeah.
They made a set of stairs because you can't just climb up the hill. Yeah, there's a set of stairs on the side for, like, the fans to get to the top.
That's cool.
Because it's just so steep.
Yeah,
but, yes, you got to go up that and then also still hit triples, you know, while you're going straight up. So it's tough to stay over the front of the bike to make it over it.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said about the whole TV thing, like, it's insane how much more steep everything is and how much more rough anything is than it looks on TV. Like, I'm from Florida, so everything here's flat. Or I'm in North Carolina now, but everything in Florida is flat. And I went and raced Amateur Day at High Point 1 year. And, like, on TV, yeah, I mean, there's hills and stuff. But, man, with the ruts and that soft stuff and the steep uphills and steep downhills, you really can't tell how difficult it is.
Yeah, and High Point, nothing's really flat. You're almost always in an off camber section. You're never just going down a flat straightaway.
Yeah, exactly. And this year it was even gnarlier with all the ruts and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty muddy in practice. So we definitely carved in a lot of lines.
And, you know, I noticed you're riding a KTM. What was the reason behind that? You just gel with the bike or you're getting a good deal on them or.
I grew up racing KTMs, like junior 50s, all that stuff, then, you know, they're kind of expensive compared to other ones parts wise. But I was on Yamahas, then my buddy's dad, you know, they ride KTMs. So I actually took his out on a Wednesday and it's set up for, you know, about 230 pound rider. And I'm probably 165 with gear. So it was pretty stiff, but I could just turn wherever I wanted to. The suspension didn't matter being that stiff. So I rode that one, then I rode my Yamaha race bike, and we come back, and someone actually had timed me on each one but didn't tell me. And he comes back. He's like, which one do you think you're faster on? I'm like, oh, I like the KTM, so I'm sure I'm faster on the Yamaha. And he's like, no, you were a couple seconds faster on the KTM. So right then and there, I'm like, okay. So rode that on a Wednesday, and Friday I was picking one up to take to Millville for the National.
That's awesome, man. Actually, you know, every day I'm, you know, reading the shootouts and stuff because I'm trying to figure out what kind of bike I'm getting next. I ride off-road, so I have a 300 two-stroke right now. But, man, the new 450s are just so nice, and I'm trying to decide what color I want. I'm actually trying to decide between orange or blue. So, but I think I'm going to lean towards the orange one.
Yeah, it sounds like the Yamahas are getting better from what I hear. Like, the issues I had with turning and everything, they're fixing that a little bit. But, man, you can't pass up pressing a button to start a bike. That's just... And I'm short. So if I'm on a hill, I mean, that's money right there. It's so nice to have that button.
Yeah, exactly. And I've had, you know, I've had KTM since 08 or 07. I had a Cowie, a Cowie 450 right in the middle. It was a great bike. I loved it. But I went back to the KTM, and just something about having that orange front fender, you know, in front of me when I'm riding too. It's just, I don't know. And the KTM 450 seems a little slimmer. At least it looks slimmer in the pictures. I don't know. Maybe I just really like KTMs.
Yeah, they're definitely a skinny bike, and the new ones, you know, apparently they slimmed up the shroud. But you know, I wear knee braces and everything, so I don't really notice, you know, how wide a bike is because, you know, you're never bare leg tight to it.
Yeah, that's a good point. But hey, let's take it back way back. How did you, first get into dirt bikes?
From my dad. He put me on a pedal bike at 2, and then I had my first race at 4. So ever since I was 4 years old, I've been racing. And, you know, my grandfather, he used to do hill climbs and street bikes and everything. So it's definitely in the family, you know, grown up, cousins, brother did it. So the whole family is a dirt bike family.
Yeah, that's kind of how mine is too. You know, my brother rides, my dad still races. My dad still kicks my ass out on the track. So, you know, it's a big thing. I think that's the only reason I really do it, you know, is like I ride with my family and then the people I ride with, you know, just at the local races and stuff have become my family too. You know, it's a huge family sport.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it is.
So, you know, you talked about started young, you know, coming up through the amateur ranks, did you do Loretta's and all that stuff?
Yep. I never qualified too much. I went 4 times in my amateur career and, all the way up till super mini. And then I tried again in schoolboy, didn't qualify through the regional, and then ended up getting hurt the following year. And then right after I did that, I just bumped up to A and started hitting pro-ams in early 2014. And then about midway through, I had my pro card, so bumped up to pro in 2014.
Man, that's crazy. Just, you know, you said you didn't qualify through the regional, and then here you are getting points in Outdoor National. You know, when that happened, when you're on your super mini, did you think, oh, I'm not going to make it pro?
Be honest with you, I always was confident in myself that I could do it. Just, I'm a firm believer in hard work, and, you know, everything you get, you have to work hard for, so I just, you know, always stuck to it, you know, just grinded it out. And then once I hit pro-ams and I started doing, you know, pretty well compared to some of the local pros, you know, that kind of gets your confidence going. And then, you know, by the time you're never ready unless you're Justin Cooper, one of those guys for, you know, the pro races. So it takes a few to get your feet wet. But, you know, once you get it, I think – it's easier to keep the ball rolling.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, since you brought up hard work, but without giving away, you know, all of your secrets, what's your training program like?
I do a lot of cycling, you know, whether it's on the indoor bike or, you know, out on the road bike, mountain biking. I do a lot of that. Not much with weights, a lot of core. And, I mean, seat time. That's the biggest thing. Just get as much seat time as you can because nothing replicates riding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You know, riding, even if it's just going out to a field and or not a field, but just like out in some woods or something, just play riding even, just, you know, being on that bike is going to help you out no matter what.
Yeah, knowing, being comfortable with how it's going to react and when you hit different things and just, yeah, whether you're out in a field, in the woods, hitting turns, whatever, just you mesh a lot, lot better.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned you turned pro in 2014. Have we tried any supercrosses or any of that yet?
No, I didn't. That's my next goal, is to get my supercross license and then, you know, try to hit those. But I'm not going to try until I get, you know, a few months on a supercross track and ride a few. It's not like outdoors where you can just go out and, you know, go for it.
Yeah. It's a whole different game. That's so lame, man. I'm not a big believer in these, like, first was the arena cross to get your license, then the amateur supercross to get your license. I mean, I don't know if you've seen these amateur supercross tracks, but there's kids on, you know, KTM 50s hitting all the jumps, you know?
Yeah, they tame them down a lot. I haven't been to one in person, but just on videos and talking to kids that have been there, it's just wide open. You can overshoot the jumps. There's no real timing. You have to get down with them.
Yeah.
They're they're just so mellow.
Yeah, like, it's nothing like a real Supercross, you know, and you're scoring points at Pro Nationals. I feel like you shouldn't have to go ride these peewee like mini bike tracks almost just to get your license so you can be ready for Supercross because, you know, like you said, practicing Supercross at tracks and, you know, you're an awesome rider, Jake. Like you're, you know, getting points in Pro Nationals. You can do it. You know, I don't know. I'm not a big believer in these, but it is what it is.
I appreciate that. But yeah, like even team riders like Moseman or Fortner mm-hmm. still making them do arena cross. I'm like, man, they have a pro contract with, you know, Monster Kawasaki. I think they're good. They're going to train for
it. But then they like a guy like Dylan Ferrandis or anyone or Covington now and probably Hunter Lawrence, they're not going to have to do it, you know? If you come over from the GPs where they don't even ride Supercross over there, they don't have to do it. I mean, it makes no sense. And then, like this weekend, Monster Cup, these kids are already riding Supercross tracks pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of them, it's in their backyard.
Yeah.
Whether they're at training facilities or, you know, have their own compound.
Yeah, like kids like I was listening to Pulp last week, and they had Carson Mumford on there, and he's got this whole, you know, like – compound with like two Supercross tracks, an outdoor track right in his backyard. You know, like the kid's 14 years old. I think he'll be ready in 3 years when it goes pro.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, I understand when people should get a pass or mm-hmm. be exempt from having to do it.
Yeah, definitely. But hey, before I let you go, big topic. Did you watch the Motocross of Nations?
I did. I watched every single race.
Yeah. I was there. I got back on Monday. I just drove, you know, straight through on the way back, just to go watch. It was incredible. The atmosphere was awesome. But, what happened with us, man? What's your opinion on why we got sixth place? Why we couldn't get it done in our own soil?
A little bit of luck wasn't on our side with starts and, mm-hmm. you know, some bike issues, especially in qualifying. So it definitely kept us on the edge of our seat, you know, whether we were going to be in the A final or not. Mm-hmm. But I'm a big hurlings fan. Me and my dad watch the GPs, and man, that guy's just amazing.
Yeah.
But just those Europeans, they you can tell when they get interviewed, they want it really bad, mm-hmm. and to, you know, be on U.S. soil, I think. This one, they wanted it more than ever, but it looked kind of tough. I mean, from TV, it looked like it was a little hard to pass. Like a few spots were pretty one-lined. Mm-hmm. There were different lines, but one was obviously a lot faster, packed down more.
Yeah, it was,
but
it was nothing like the National was, you know, the dirt-wise and all that. Nothing like the National.
Yeah. Yeah, it looked real sandy, and then that hard base underneath, which I had never really seen there before.
Yeah.
The 3-4 times I've been there, it's just been bottomless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looked more like Southwick to me than Redbud, honestly.
Which I get.
I think they put more sand down because of the rain and all that. And to be honest, man, like walking through the pits, you couldn't even walk through the pits because you're falling over. It was so slimy and slippery. The track was amazing. I remember walking up Saturday, I was like, I can't believe I just drove all this way. Like, it's going to suck. They're not even going to hit the jumps. And then, you know, I forgot. I think it was Paulin hit the leap the second lap. I'm like, all right, it might be pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. This trip wasn't, mm-hmm. it was definitely worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was disappointing, but, you know, stuff happens. They can't be perfect all the time. So, I mean, hopefully we can get it next year and, you know, get that streak again. Like we used to do.
Yeah, we used to freaking dominate.
Yeah. It was just like, if we get second, what's wrong?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
but no, like they're Barsha, Tomac, and Plessinger. They're so fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't bash them.
No.
They're just sometimes it's your year and sometimes it's not. So, you know, we'll get it.
Yeah, I mean,
this gave a little bit more fire under us to, you know, get angry to take it back.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said, man, the starts, like for Tomac's first race, I guess that was Moto One, he had the second fastest time and it wasn't that much slower than Hurlings, you know, like he was hauling ass. But when you start 18th, you know, with 17 of the best riders in the world in front of you, it's just not going to happen, you know. And they were hauling ass. They were riding their ass off. They just, they couldn't get done. I was hearing that, you know, Plessinger crashed pretty good on Saturday, and I was hearing on Sunday that there a couple people were telling me that like maybe that was kind of bothering him and stuff like that. But like you said, it is what it is, and maybe we'll get some fire.
Yep, exactly. And like Saturday, Tomac's start in that qualifying race, I guess because of the rain, it made the grape a little slippery. Mm-hmm. But it was like he just spun, and then he caught the gate, you know, had that piece of metal on it, like Supercross. So then once he hit that, he just went completely sideways.
Yeah, I saw a picture. It was crazy.
Yeah. So I think it was just little stuff that was getting us. Mm-hmm. Just little mistakes that, you know, with those guys, you can't have them.
Yeah, I definitely agree. But hey, Jake, thank you so much for your time. And last thing before we hang up here, who do you want to thank for, you know, helping you out?
Like to thank my whole family, mom, dad, brother, everybody, you know, coming and supporting me, all, you know, the fans that I hopefully made through Kiefer and you guys. Like to thank Fly, KB5, Shoei, Fredericktown Yamaha, Ellicott City Motorsports, 100%, and everyone else I forgot. But yeah, it's definitely a team effort, and I couldn't have done it without everybody.
Awesome, man. Well, you know, hopefully we'll see you at some Supercrosses. And get that license, and you'll get in some night shows and some main events, and then we'll definitely see you outdoors next year.
Yeah, for sure. Sounds good. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man, of course. You have a good day, or a good night, I guess.
Thanks, man. You too.
See ya.
Straight caught up in the game. My life won't be the same. Straight caught up in the game. My life won't be the same.
Living the life, that's how I live. Try to get out, tell me how to survive without my crew. Armani's, Ferraris, casinos, hitting jackpots. Good luck, I think not, we own the car from block to block. City to city, all day, every day. It's like a celebration for the criminal nation. Himido, wife and kids, that's what I need. Wanna go out like a man, try to understand without blood on my hands. Dear God, please save my soul. I put the rest on hold, not seven. I still got time to reach heaven. 1 million reasons to get out, choose one, there's only one. To put the 9mm to your dome, then you're gone. Did I do right or wrong? Tell me. I might drop some tears from my eye, but you never see me cry. Champagne, spit rhymes like crazy insane. LA to Stocktown, different players caught up in the same game.
Am I right or am I wrong?